Let me keep this simple. One of the greatest and most important composers of the past 100 years is our next guest, Philip Glass. Philip Glass has written a remarkable memoir about his remarkable life. It's called Words Without Music. One big impression I took away from the book was how his immersion in other cultures shaped his development. Trips to places like India, Australia, Tibet, Mexico, where he found the brightest minds, musical or otherwise, to teach him. He says those relationships shaped how he thought about music and life.
Let's say the door to world music was opened for me by Ravi Shankar, because I became his assistant and I had to learn enough about the music so I could notate what he was playing. And that led to an interest in India, and so I was able to get a very deep connection with that music. I found that the encounters I made with indigenous musicians, whether they were from Mexico or from Australia or from China, from Tibet, those encounters were the most stimulating parts of my education.
I felt like my ears were best prepared for your music by listening to Indian classical music, the rhythms in particular.
Well, that helped me too. I had the same experience. It wasn't that easy to hear at first. Now, you have to remember, I was working with Ravi Shankar in 1963, but at the beginning, when I went to first to work with him, and I knew I was going to be working with a master of Indian classical music, I had never heard any. And I was in Paris. I went out and I bought a record of Indian classical music. I couldn't make a heads or tails of it.
And can you talk about, not just Ravi Shankar, but you really learned about Indian rhythm with his accompanist.
Alaraka.
Yeah, master percussionist.
With Alaraka, I could really study the details of the rhythmic structure of Indian music, because with that, everything can fit in.
I'll play in Ala Chautal, which is a rhythmic cycle of 14. It's like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 1.
You write about the rhythmic aspect of something that maybe has been a bit neglected in the West. And I think about, well, you write about how your early compositions, people treated you in some ways, the bad reactions were, they thought you were just a musical dunce, in your words. And I feel like, well, were they not hearing the rhythms? You know, were they not seeing, you know, feeling the complexity that was there?
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. I realized this years later, when I was notating his music, I found everything fell into patterns based on twos and threes, odds and evens. Basically, it's a binary structure. It's a binary language. And this is in 1963, 64. I didn't even hear about binary music until, well, I mean, it could have been 35, 40 years later. In fact, that was the basis of Indian classical music for hundreds of years. And so I had, by the time I did Einstein on the Beach, that piece is completely written in a binary form. It's how those twos and threes fit together in overall structures that make the larger form of the music happen.
It was interesting, and later on when you came to work with Ravi Shankar again, I think it was in 1990 when you did an album together called Passages. Mm-hmm. It's unless you look over the liner notes, you have a hard time telling who wrote which piece.
That's right. We had a hard time, too. But the way it was done was this way. We alternated. He started with a melody of mine, and I started with a melody of his. And then we basically composed music around each other's music.
You haven't just thrown yourself into other musical cultures. You've thrown yourself into other spiritual traditions, and both in India and in Tibet and other parts of the world. I'm curious, because you write about growing up as basically an atheist Jew. What were you after from these yogis and lamas?
I was interested in what they all have in common. And we're talking about the Taoist tradition of China or the Shinto traditions of Japan, what you find in the indigenous people in Australia. What they have in common is that they're not us. And I very early recognized that my view of the world was I was taught to see the world in a certain way because that's what I learned, and that's what every culture does. Our description of the world is embedded in us, is beaten into our heads when we're children. And to get out of that is very, very difficult. I found out that the Tibetan description was different, the Taoist was different, the Aboriginal Australian was different. And I became, I would say, an addict of that kind of thing. And having that foundation made it, to be truthful, much easier. When you start applying that to music, it becomes extremely interesting. I guess one of the reasons I wrote so much music in my life is I met so many interesting people.
I want to finally ask you a question, which is your own question as a young man in the book. Where does the music come from?
That's right. That's right. That's why I became a composer, actually, when I was 15. I thought if I began writing music, I would find out. Of course, I didn't find out. But I asked other people that question, and I remember once in the 1960s, and I was visiting Ravi Shankar. He was doing some concerts in London, and I was nearby in Paris, so I came over to see him. And I said to him, Ravi, where does music come from? He turned to a table on his bedside, and there was a picture of an Indian gentleman in a kind of a, what we would call a Nehru coat. And he did a complete bowing down to the picture, and he said it. By the grace of my guru, the music has come through him to me. And I thought that was as good an answer as you're ever going to get. My current view of it, and it came about through one of those talks I have with students, and they asked me the same question that you asked. And I said, spontaneously and without reflection and without intending to, I said, music is a place. And it's as real as Chicago or New Delhi. And musicians, generally speaking, have their foot, one foot in that world and another foot in the world of everyday life. And any musician can tell you that that's true. And it turns out that does resonate with people. They say, yes, place is a place. They understand that.
Philip Glass, his new memoir is called Words Without Music. Thank you so much.
Oh, happy to talk with you, Ruben.